The go through some emails, check your calendar, see that you have a 45-minute break in the day between meetings, realize this is your moment, so you drive right to McDonald's to pick up something extra delicious ASAP. Meal.
Thank you.
There's a meal for every moment at McDonald's.
Buy one of your select faves and get another for just a dollar every morning, like a sausage McMuffin or hash browns.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for product of equal or lesser value. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Combo meal valid when product served.
Welcome to episode number 45 of the LSR podcast. My name is Matt Brown, joined each and every week by the brightest minds in all of the gaming industry. I got with me Dustin Galker, got with me Adam Candy. A little bit later, we'll be joined by a voice that you will remember from this very podcast in Eric Ramsey. He'll go over mainly a very big story that he's been working on a very long time about Oregon sports betting and the SB Tech contract and everything over there. We'll briefly talk to him about the resurgence in the poker world as well during this times of quarantine, but stick around for that for sure. But as always, guys, we are on Apple. We are on Google. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. So go in, please subscribe, rate, and review. We really do appreciate all the 5-star reviews and helps us climb those charts so people can find us a little bit easier. Let's kick things off here. Let's talk about, you know, the inevitability. This is stuff we were talking about last week on the podcast of all of the closures. There were still some casinos that were open as of us recording last week. We assumed that there were going to be many, many more closures, and that is definitely the case.
Yeah, Matt, according to the American Gaming Association, 100% of casinos in the United States are closed now. There had been some holdouts, some on tribal lands and in some states that have not responded to the COVID crisis in quite the same way that others have. So we know that the American Gaming Association has been lobbying at the federal level to try to be included in any sort of stimulus package. And we know that Congress is working on that as we speak and hopefully able to hammer something out that can help people in the casino industry trying to get in on that, considering that it might be one of the last to reopen as a place that is pretty much, you know, somewhere where you are required to have large gatherings.
Yeah, it is. There was a lot of flack, I think, Dustin, I saw on Twitter from a lot of people in the gaming world that were saying, you know, what was taking some of these casinos so long to go ahead and make the decision that seemed, you know, pretty obvious to a bunch of us out here. And then, you know, many of their peers obviously had shut down. And so finally, we do see that that pretty much everybody has gone ahead and closed the doors now. But it was there was some peer pressure that was going on the Twitter machine amongst the gaming people out there.
Yeah, look, it's, you know, it's real easy for us to sit here and say, close your business down or all that. So it's another thing when you're running the business, you have people who depend on checks. You're, you know, the story came out today that, you know, a lot of the gaming industry has those fixed costs that don't go away. They pay for the property, you know, just keeping the place up to standard, right? Those are fixed costs they can't do anything with. And, you know, some of them have really limited cash on hand. Penn National, for instance, runs casinos all across the country, only has about 5 months of cash if everything continues to go on as it is right now. That's the kind of calculus they're doing. So, you know, that's why, you know, they have, to their credit, they generally shut down pretty quickly. But and tribal casinos especially, you know, they are the lifeblood in some places of the places where they are. They provide revenue, jobs, things like that. It's not quite the same as just shutting down a commercial casino. So yeah, lots of calculus going into this. Obviously, people going to casinos in this day and age, not great, you know, passing around dirty chips, touching slot machines. These are things you should not want to do. Obviously, things like that also trend a little older. People who generally visit casinos are older, obviously more susceptible to this. So this is all really kind of had to happen. But, you know, the gaming industry is being knocked on its ass, although we've seen stocks kind of rally in the past 2 days and have gained back some of their value after hitting some low. I feel like I even heard you might have speculated on some gaming stocks.
I did. I mean, there was, you know, listen, and it was one of those things where I just looked at where, you know, we talked about last week, how everything it looked like had just completely bottomed out. And so you know, some of these ones that had interests over in Macau, where I knew that they weren't completely reliant on just the U.S. market, were the ones that kind of looked interesting to me. Wynn and Sands and MGM specifically were the ones that, you know, as we know, have some interest over there in Macau. So those were kind of some stuff that I speculated on a little bit. You know, Adam, one of the things that we pay attention to a lot and that makes a lot of news here in Las Vegas is how these casinos, Dustin mentioned the workers that are going without checks and stuff, how these casinos are dealing with all of that and with the cash on hand is certainly something that I'm sure is going to play into how long these policies stay in place with, you know, the gaming industry and how long they are able to pay their workers. I know that, you know, Wynn and Sands are all paying their employees. We've heard that there is, you know, a bunch of different casinos that have at least are going to pay their employees for X amount of time. They have not said indefinitely or whatever it's going to be. And so, you know, the clock is ticking certainly for some of those people as well.
You know, it's something that not only has to be considered at the company level, but, you know, the governor of Nevada, Steve Sisolak, has certainly been at the forefront of governors who have been aggressive in terms of shutdowns. He shut down the casinos for a month minimum. You're looking at mid-April before the casinos in Nevada might open up again. And just yesterday, he banned any gathering in Nevada of more than 10 people and was very clear about the fact that, you know, he would make whatever decisions he made based on public health and not on any sort of political pressure or you know, economic consideration that would outweigh public health. So, you know, the casinos are in a very difficult position. A lot of them really had any sort of plan for anything like this. There hasn't been anything like this. The last time the casinos closed for any length of time, it was when President Kennedy was killed. So, you know, this is not something that anyone really had a contingency plan for. So if you are MGM or Caesars or any of the others that you just mentioned, it's really hard to know how to chart your way through this territory because it is unmarked. There's no way to know how it's going to go. You're looking at, according to stats from Nevada Resort Association, I mean, this is the sort of thing that, you know, if it's prolonged over the course of a few months, could be a $40 billion of economic impact overall. Southern Nevada has 250,000 people, including 100,000 on the Strip, who work in some sort of tourism-related industry. So, yeah, the pressure here in Nevada, the pressure on gaming companies that are headquartered in Nevada or that rely heavily on Las Vegas is enormous.
And Dustin, sports betting companies in particular, we talked about last week, we were saying that it was going to be super rough on those guys. They're trying to get creative as to how they are able to still make at least a little bit of money along the way here. And one of the things that we've been seeing is the opening up of markets and sports that we have never seen before, including sumo wrestling, ping pong. We saw there was at least a brief moment where they were going to try to offer the iRacing that was going on Fox, which, by the way, the ratings came out. Nearly a million people watch people play video games, fake racing on Fox. So that's actually pretty interesting when it all comes down to it. But we figured they were going to have to try and get creative. And just in the past week, since we recorded the last podcast, we've seen some of that.
Yeah, I mean, and creativity can only go so far. Like, even if you add these new things, they're, sumo and table tennis are at best niche things that, you know, you really have to want action to bet on those things because nobody watches these things otherwise. But, you know, if you're looking for a little bit of a sweat and, you know, on other types of gambling aren't your thing or any other hobby isn't your thing, then you're probably still getting down on that kind of stuff. Here's a fun exercise, though. I fired up the Oregon sports betting app here. My options are Nicaraguan soccer, Russian volleyball, and the aforementioned table tennis. That's the entirety of the offer on a Wednesday evening for in Oregon here, and that's the state of things, which is not great. I also have all the PA and New Jersey apps, and I get all the offers that they send out. I actually got an odds boost from Park Sportsbook in Pennsylvania saying for a table tennis match, which is just wild. I mean, I don't think he should be. I don't know. It's one thing to offer it. It's another thing to say like, odds boost on a table tennis match. That seems a little much to me. But it is, you know, they're trying, you know, trying to create some revenue and do what they can. You know, we've seen DFS be a little bit more. Not aggressive, but they're doing lots of free to play contests, trying to keep people engaged when there's nothing else other than really esports to bet on or play DFS on. They actually have simulated contests at both FanDuel and DraftKings based on real games where they're then pulling out simulated statistics. I'm not even sure I know exactly how it works. I've seen it, but again, it's a free to play thing. You don't actually enter with real money, but just something to keep people engaged because the lack of sports has created a huge gap in our social consciousness.
And Adam, I think as before we move on here, I think that we should say just, you know, to the listeners out there. I mean, we kind of joke about it because it's like, they're offering sumo, they're offering table tennis. But, you know, definitely should not be betting just for the sake of betting. I think we just want to go ahead and just put a blanket statement out there. I mean, listen, if you want to bet $5 on a ping pong game just because you think it's funny, that's fine. But I mean, you know, let's not just bet for the sake of betting just because there's only a, you know, two things that are offered for you to bet on.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Although I am on Oleg Nikiforov in the table tennis match that starts here with him. Yeah, not actually. I'm not betting.
Right. No, I know. And we're certainly trying to be. We're certainly trying to lead the way here of being responsible in these times as well, and creating different content that isn't around table tennis or isn't around whatever in our various network of sites and things like that as well.
And we're dancing around it here. It's, you know, this is a responsible gambling thing too, right? This is, you know, as we've talked about in the podcast recently, people have, you know, uncertain incomes. You shouldn't be going around. You shouldn't bet on stuff as a way to replace income. This is not a good idea. You should be only be betting with money that you have or money that you can afford to part with. That's what gambling is. So, betting a ton of money on table tennis and Nicaraguan soccer, bad idea, unless you're just using it for entertainment purposes, then by all means have at it. Go knock yourself out. But yeah, we shouldn't be saying like, yeah, you're staying at home. I'm sure we'll be doing more content about this because, you know, I know the National Council on Problem Gambling has even identified this. If you're home, you're worried about revenue, you're worried about where your next paycheck's coming, like you might go down a hole of, oh, I can win some of this money back gambling. Not a good idea. You shouldn't be on our end or anywhere on the gambling side of the industry. Nobody should be promoting that. And just, yeah, we need to be sensitive to this because, again, we've said this many times, we're uncharted waters. It's not business as usual for the gambling industry right now.
And Adam, before we move on, though, I should go ahead and give credit where credit is due. You are known and have been known before sumo wrestling was even cool. You were the premier sumo wrestling sharp here in Las Vegas. So I just, before you go ahead and open up your tout site for sumo wrestling, I want to give you credit there.
You know, guys, there's a reason that sumo limits were dropped in Las Vegas and you're talking to him right now.
Oh, yeah.
I have gone to sumo wrestling in Japan and it is absolutely fantastic to witness in person. And because I've been there once, I am an expert.
Obviously, as we know, you know, all you need to do is see something once. I mean, we know now. I mean, there's infectious disease experts all over Twitter and all they've had to do is, you know, watch a couple of news programs. So, I mean, you know, we know how it goes.
That's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Dustin, let's talk about some not great news here. One of those companies that we're talking about that relies on sports betting here is William Hill. And, you know, listen, this is stuff we might see more of as we move along here, but it looks like they're going to have to part ways with a little bit of staff.
Yeah, a report from William Hill is they furloughed more than half of their U.S. staff. This is, you know, not shocking. William Hill basically only a sports betting operator, has lots of retail shops in addition to a little bit of online, but, you know, they're in Vegas and Nevada, more than 100 shops across the state. So I think this was pretty obvious they were going to do this. They're trying their best to kind of deal with this. CEO of William Hill US, Joe Asher, actually pledged to donate a salary as part of an effort called the William Hill USA Foundation. We're seeing a lot of this in lots of industries where people are trying to set up ways to deal with, you know, people who are out of work instead of just saying, see you later, good luck. Obviously, they hope to hire all these people back when, you know, sports returns, because there's, you know, it's going to happen eventually. It's just an uncertain world. But, you know, this is, again, we've been saying this a lot. Any of these companies that are very much focused on sports in the short term have really uncertain outlooks until there's a real plan for sports to return.
Adam, for our friends that are in Denver right now, our friends in Boulder that are wondering when they are going to be able to bet legally whenever sports come back, what do we have to tell our friends in Colorado?
You can tell your friends in Colorado that May 1st is still the target launch date for the Colorado Division of Gaming. They have not really made any sort of movement away from that at the moment. They did meet recently to approve some more licenses, 16 more licenses approved at a meeting last week. FanDuel, FoxBet, and PointsBet getting into the market there. And as of now, you know, the director of the Colorado Division of Gaming, Dan Hartman, said that they really haven't approached the launch date and they're still moving forward as though everything is staying on track.
I actually know several people in Colorado there that will be happy to hear that. There are a bunch of big DFS players, bunch of big poker players that have moved on and live in Colorado now. So those guys will certainly love that they will be able to do that whenever sports do come back. Dustin, we talk often about the crown jewels of states when it comes to gaming and certainly when it comes to sports betting: New York, Texas, California, and Florida. Well, Florida is sitting here, and we've kind of ping-ponged back and forth with, you know, maybe there could be an outside chance of something happening. Maybe there couldn't, you know, maybe there's absolutely no chance depending on who you're listening to. Where do we sit with Florida?
Yeah, Florida not happening again. I think with a few examples of where places might make progress, Florida is one of those places that was just, you know, I think this pandemic has really, you know, put everything on the back burner as far as sports betting legislation. It was already going to be a tough get in Florida. Lots of interest, lots of people involved, and not really close to having, you know, they need to have a larger gaming discussion in Florida, and sports betting is just a part of it. It's not like, oh, we just pass sports betting and deal with the rest later. There's all sorts of stuff going on. The Seminole Tribe tracks and card rooms and things like that in Florida. So it was just a tough lift. So it's, yeah, they ended their session without anything being done. I think I've been told every year that I've been doing this that there's a possibility of a special session for gaming that would encompass sports betting DFS. I'll believe that when I see it. I don't think I've ever said Miami would fall into the swamp before they'd have sports betting, but it still seems a pretty long ways off, and it's certainly at least 2021 till they get something done at this point.
And Adam, one of those states that I just mentioned that we have to basically check in on every single podcast, it feels like one of those crown jewels, is New York. Where do we sit with what's going on up there?
We sit down in the basement once again with mobile sports betting in New York. Let's start here. Governor Andrew Cuomo obviously has bigger fish to fry right now than anything having to do with gaming or any issue that is not being the point man for America's governors in saying, hey, we need help in terms of responding to the COVID crisis. That being said, the legislature did attempt to get word from the governor to say, are you going to be able to consider putting mobile sports betting in the budget this year, and got a response back from his office saying, no, that's not going to happen. What was the plan in New York was for each of the houses to put mobile sports betting in their budget proposals and see if they could get the governor to go along with it. But because of the expedited session in New York related to the coronavirus, they forewent that process of having individual budgets, and it will be just one budget. And that kind of did mobile in terms of getting it in the budget, which was the shortest path to mobile in New York. Again, it's not dead. There are, like other states of its size, tribal issues, constitutional issues. So New York's not done, but it is definitely an underdog.
And like you said, you know, pretty much at the forefront of needing, you know, to deal with the crisis that's going on right now is the state of New York. And so, as you mentioned, probably something that is was already down the list of things of priorities, but has moved way onto the back burner.
Oh, without a question. Yeah. In New York, I mean, it was already a long shot to start with, and There's no reason to believe it's going to be anything other than that. Only other legislative activity, Matt, worth checking in on that we were tracking last week. State of Maryland, as we mentioned on the podcast last week, did approve a bill that is going to send sports betting to the ballot. That was initially a bill that had implementation language in it, but at the last second was pretty much gutted and put in front of voters. Now, mind you, it was a step that was going to have to happen regardless. Voters in Maryland were going to have a say on whether to approve sports betting. They're just doing the process a little differently than they might have. But our Matt Credell caught up with a couple of representatives in Maryland who said that concerns over inclusion with women, with minorities, those of who are able to get sports betting licenses was one of the major factors in turning that bill from a finished product into a referendum that will essentially come back to the legislature next year for them to look at once again.
And guys, as always, we will keep you updated on all of these stories that we are talking about here and any new news that comes out. You can always find at LegalSportsReport.com. Now we want to bring in our good friend Eric Ramsey. He had been all over this Oregon sports betting story, and we finally have a resolution there. Now joining us here, our good friend Eric Ramsey. Eric, we are so glad to have you back on the podcast. You are still, I want you to know, one of the brightest minds in all of the gaming industry, even though you are just going to join us as a guest now here and there.
I'm so honored to be a special guest here on my very favorite podcast. Now, as just a listener, I've given you guys the 5-star review you asked for. I'm still a loyal listener, so nice to be with you again.
We're ahead of, like, I don't know, what's the Syracuse podcast? Only Orange? Is that
Yeah.
We beat that?
Are we ahead of it?
I don't know. I assume there's some Syracuse podcasts.
In my heart, you guys are my favorite non-sports, non-food, non-science podcast. Maybe I should have okay, clarified that a little bit.
I mean, we're still number one in a certain category, you know,
for
so,
sure.
Yeah. So that's we're good with that. Before we get into this big Oregon story that you've been working so long on here, just want to briefly talk about, I mean, obviously you are our poker guy, and we have really seen a resurgence here in the poker industry over, you know, during this quarantine period. This is something, you know, you and I talked about here and there on the podcast along the way as to whether we were going to see any sort of, was there ever going to be another poker boom? Was there ever going to be any sort of poker renaissance? And, you know, I guess when people are forced to stay at home, they kind of go back into some old habits here. We saw a record breaking global tournament. And then we've also seen just some really crazy numbers here in the Nevada, New Jersey partnerships as well.
Man, you bring me on just to talk about poker. That I don't know how to feel about that. But yeah, there is actually more going on in poker than in sports betting somehow right now. We'll start with the international one you mentioned. PokerStars.com has a Sunday Million every Sunday that, you know, started back in the day as a 1 million guaranteed tournament. They had an anniversary edition this past weekend with 12.5 million guaranteed. It blew past that, got more than 18 million in the prize pool. Largest Sunday Million ever, tens of thousands of entries, really just traffic like the international poker scene has never seen before. And then here in the U.S., we're starting to establish some new floors for what the possibilities can be. You know, the coronavirus outbreak has sort of shuttered all live poker, including some World Series of Poker circuit events that were already underway or on the schedule here between now and summer. So those are off, and in their place is this online super circuit on WSOP.com, available in New Jersey and Nevada, also available to players in Delaware on 888, and essentially just 18 online ring events with about 1.2 million guaranteed across them. Halfway through, it was already over 2 million in total prize pools awarded. Again, you know, fields that this poker site, these poker markets have not seen. So, you know, it's unfortunate why this is happening. But if we're going to have another poker boom in the near future, we might be looking at sort of the first wave of it here.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the biggest names, one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name in the poker industry, was Daniel Negreanu, who basically said, hey, shut down all the poker rooms. These things are about the dirtiest places you could possibly be during all this. So even though he, you know, he makes a living playing poker, he was one of the ones that was screaming from a mountaintop to go ahead and get things shut down. We've seen, you know, one of the big poker players, and Doc Sand say that he actually contracted the coronavirus as well. So this is certainly one of those things where we've been, like you said, the poker world has kind of come forefront here in all of this. We've seen some of the big tournaments, as you mentioned, get postponed and or moved online. That leads us to, you know, of course, we've got a little bit of time here, but everyone keeps asking about whether they think the World Series of Poker is going to be played as scheduled. As we sit right now, no official word one way or the other, correct?
Yeah, the official word is it's still happening as planned. In talking with some of the folks at WSOP, they're certainly obviously paying attention to what's going on. I think there's probably a general sense that it's very unlikely to happen over the summer. The issue we have with World Series of Poker is just its size and its timing. It lives in a spot in the Las Vegas calendar where there's that sort of convention space is available. It's really hard to find another spot in the year where you might be able to have an event that big. So yeah, we don't really know. We may be looking at some online events to take their place, or a reduced schedule, or some sort of changes to the summer action. But as of right now, today, it is still on as planned.
And Dustin, as the head of content here for all of our sites, I know that this story that Eric worked on is something that you are very proud of for, you know, stuff that we have put out. And Adam, of course, you run LSR, and it's being found on your site. And so this is Dustin, I'll let you kind of give an overall an overview of this before we kick it over to Eric and let him kind of run with it all.
Yeah, man, this is some, I guess not until now, some pretty thankless work that Eric's done. He's basically single-handedly, maybe not double-handedly if you count the Oregonian, which has been involved, gotten the contract in the Oregon Lottery and SB Tech and how sports betting happens here in Oregon, which has been not very good in the early weeks and months of it. So Eric has done a really good job of, you know, doing some really good journalism, doing, you know, freedom of information to try to get to the contract. It ended, the whole case ended up in court, and because of his good work and the groundwork that he laid, we ended up winning that case and actually got this contract that is absolutely in the public interest between SB Tech and the Oregon Lottery and how sports betting in Oregon goes down. And I feel like I've been effusively praising Eric a lot, and he deserves it because I know how much work he put into it, and to see the results of it has been, you know, really gratifying for me, and I'm sure for him.
That's why I came here today, just to collect all that praise. Give me all that. That's,
you're not getting anything from Adam. You see, Adam's just sitting back. He's kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe at the end I'll do a little something there. But Eric, let's go ahead and let's get into this. And so, you know, this was something that Oregon passes sports betting, and this was one of the deals where we saw it was not, you know, an open market and whatnot. And so what made you kind of start digging into all this? What was the precipice for you really kind of taking this on as a passion project?
Yeah, we can sit here and talk, you know, anecdotally about what is and is not a good framework for sports betting. But until you see some numbers, we're just basically hypothesizing with everyone else. Unfortunately, when the numbers started coming in from Oregon in the first few months, they looked really, really bad. We understood that SB Tech was getting a relatively small share of revenue that we didn't really know. And when the report started coming out, we saw that the apparent share they were getting seemed to be rather large, something like half or maybe more. And more worryingly, the state was just flat out losing money from sports betting by the millions of dollars. Here we are at the end of February is the last report we have, and the state has already lost $2 million from its sports betting operation, despite about $6 million in revenue coming in, and recently revised its forecast for the fiscal year, planning to lose a total of $5.3 million for the fiscal year. So again, we didn't expect that this would be an incredibly successful product just based on the framework, the size of the market, some of the constraints they're working with. But when you have a public state agency losing money that would otherwise be going towards public programs like education, there are, you know, there's some questions to be asked. So that is why I went hunting for this contract originally.
And for people who might not completely understand this, I mean, you know, sports betting, they might look at this and say, like, well, you know, I mean, maybe they will lose money. Maybe, you know, the really hot, these sports bettors in Oregon are just really, really good at it. But I think we can.
That's not true at all.
but Eric, I mean, I think we can look at this anecdotally across the entire country of ours. I mean, we've seen Nevada win money sports betting for, you know, 100 months straight or whatever it is. And we've even seen some of these states that have that don't have an open marketplace are still making money. So that is why this was so peculiar.
Yeah, again, and I don't really, to be frank, I don't care if your state makes or loses money from sports betting. Unless your lottery is operating your sports betting product, then it becomes a legitimate matter of public interest. Like I said, this is revenue that should be going to other programs that is instead disappearing or going to vendors. So it's important to have at least an accounting of where that's going.
So give us a timeline of all this. This has been a long time in the making.
Yeah, we started this back in November was the first petition to the lottery itself, sort of informally asking for this contract. They pushed back a little bit, so we went through the official channels, which is fortunately Oregon has a really robust set of public records laws and a good process to help folks like us through that. So went through the official channels, got an approval from the deputy attorney general. Shout out to Frederick Boss there in Oregon. Early in January, he approved our petition, ordered the lottery and SB Tech to disclose the contract. So they were under orders. They had 7 days to do that. On the seventh day, SB Tech filed suit against us, against the lottery, against the Department of Justice, trying to prevent this from being disclosed. So that was still in early January. And it took until this week to get it all sorted out through the courts. We've had two hearings throughout February. And right at the tail end of February, the judge ruled in our favor, finally ordering SB Tech to turn over the contract. They chose not to appeal, and this week sent the contract to our inboxes.
So with all this, there's probably going to be some people out there wondering, why were they fighting so hard to not turn over the contract? Why, in fact, were they fighting so hard?
Well, there are a lot of people that are really anxious to see this, some competitors and just industry folks. I think people looking for an indictment of SB Tech might be a little disappointed. I think what I see from the contract and from the arrangement between these companies and other vendors is just that it's really expensive to start up a sports betting operation from the ground up. You know, I quickly mentioned the restrictions Oregon has, but no collegiate betting. There are some financial things that sort of hinder the way bettors get money down. And under these constraints, it's just really hard for us to with a monopoly operation. There are just essentially too many mouths to feed for how much revenue is coming into Oregon. So it's something that, you know, looks like it will get better after maturity here. Once we start to get a positive flow of revenue and some of the startup costs get behind the lottery. But, my big takeaway is just this model, this monopoly lottery model is really hard to sustain in a small state.
Even before we got the contract, I think that's pretty evident from all of this, and that, you know, maybe it's different in every state. You know, I think a monopoly can succeed. I don't think it absolutely has to fail. But, you know, Oregon, I think in the short term, it would have been better served by just creating a little bit more open market like we've seen other places where you let multiple operators come in. You don't have any of the upfront costs. You say, hey, come do business. Give us a slice of revenue. We let people who really know what they're talking about take care of it. You know, not that SB Tech doesn't know what's talking about, but it's, you know, it's also running monopoly. It doesn't have a whole lot of reason to create the absolute best product that it can in Oregon. So, selfishly, you know, as an Oregon resident and just, you know, as somebody who's, we're advocating again for usually open markets and, you know, trying to combat the offshore market. I think this is a real kind of an indictment of monopoly systems and that we can do better, and that there's no reason that, like, the Oregon lottery, had it chosen a different path, would be in a better spot than it is right now.
And Adam, Dustin kind of just hit on something I was going to follow up with you on this is, you know, one of the other things, not only is it good for the consumer, which obviously we are always trying to look at what's best for the consumer as well, for there to be multiple options in a state, but also it is just better to combat the illegal market as well. We always talk about trying to, you know, make the legal U.S. market as appealing as humanly possible against what you can find offshore. And, you know, in most scenarios, the more states that these businesses can operate in, the more revenue they can make, the more offerings they would be able to do, the more marketing they would be able to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So not only is it better for the consumer as well, but it also helps the cause in just the overall, I would believe, U.S. landscape of legalized betting.
Your point is well taken. It's important to remember, I would say, that it's not one size fits all where everyone starts from scratch and says, what ingredients would we like in this cake, right? There are some states that have constraints on them in terms of what they're able to do legally without a change through the legislature, et cetera, et cetera. But if you are in a position to make that choice and you're, say, Washington, D.C., where you're choosing between going through your lottery and using your current provider, Intralot, who has proven to be a mess in Montana, or you have the option to bring in multiple operators, then, you know, there is certainly a case to be made for going the multiple operator route. New Hampshire just went through this, right? New Hampshire just went through this situation. DraftKings offered them the most revenue back if they were the exclusive provider, and that's the route they chose. Now we'll see where that eventually goes. That is the one market that seems to have done okay. I'm going to say okay, not great, thus far. You know, to the point of what Eric has been working on, there's a couple things that I think are worth mentioning here. We talk about trying to get the details of this contract. This is a public contract that is between the lottery, a public entity, and a private company. And SB Tech was trying to use an argument to say that there were some sort of trade secrets in this contract. To be honest, when we saw what was in the contract, it was even harder to understand why they were trying to defend this, because when you add up the math, and I'll let Eric take you through the various fees that are involved in this, because that's the part that had been redacted in the previous submissions that we received. When you look at the fees, they're not that out of line with what other states who have chosen this single operator model through the lottery have had. It looks to us like you can max out the potential fees paid to SB Tech at roughly 50%. Now, you might get some argument from some as to when a third party provider is paid through that company, how much money that company gets, et cetera, et cetera. It's not worth getting lost in the details. The point of the matter here is that their contract is not that far apart from what we've seen in other places where there was no trouble getting in the information. So I think it bears repeating that it's kind of hard to understand why they fought so hard on this. And from the perspective of the state of Oregon, in the end, good on the state of Oregon after they initially fought this for turning around and getting on the right side of it and saying, no, listen, this is what has to be done here. This is in the public interest. This is public money that's being spent. Eric was saying, if it's a lottery that's running it, this is what we need to know. And it's tax money. And we're seeing this in various places and various forms of life right now. If it's your money paying for these things, you deserve to know where it's going.
So, Eric, take us home on this. What were some of the interesting things that you found in the contract, though? Adam said it wasn't even that it was any sort of real craziness that was going on there.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to run through all the numbers because it's so the three of us got lost in percentages and breaking down some math yesterday for a couple hours. But like he said, the vendors fees can eclipse 50% of revenue, which is a large share. And that's before lottery pays costs for things like staffing and its technology investments that it's having to make. Don't forget, there's going to be a big retail equipment purchase coming up here, too, for physical lottery sports betting equipment. So there are just a lot of costs involved here. And at least a majority of the revenue is going to vendors right off the top. So like we said, makes it really hard for the state to turn a profit out of the gate. It's almost impossible under this framework, from what we see, for the state to make money on this. It's going to take some serious effort.
I think the part that I found interesting, again, is I'm also biased as a better and a state resident, but up to 12, the contract says up to 12% of gross revenue can be used for bonusing. And I can tell you here on the ground in Oregon that we aren't getting many bonuses. There's no first deposit bonus for any new user. You do get some retention bonuses depending on your action and what you're betting on and things like that. So there is some, but I can guarantee you it's not 12% of GGR. And then that upsets me, because that means they're not doing everything they can to acquire new customers, because that's kind of what you need to get in. If you're saying, well, here's a sports betting app, go bet, that's, you know, that does seem appealing to some people. It's appealing to me, but you want to get people started and really get them drawn in. This is what you do, and this is what happens in other markets. And because it's a monopoly and you're only competing against offshores, they've made the determination. Again, I don't know if we know exactly who pulls the levers, how much it's SB Tech, how much it's the lottery here, but they're not really using that ability, that something built into the contract, to aggressively get new customers. So that annoys me because it's, you know, that's hindering the success of the product and, you know, cutting into the black market in any kind of meaningful way.
Yeah. Again, the full story at LegalSportsReport.com. Be sure and take a look over there. Again, Eric just worked on this for a very long time, and we're pretty proud of everything that's gone on with getting this to your eyeballs here. Now, Adam, let's, before we get out of here, I mean, there's a couple of other things that not really worth us, you know, putting our two cents to that are over on the site, but I did want to bring to people's attention if they want to head on over there. We do have a couple of interviews over on LSR, and we also have that piece that we talked about last week on the podcast as well, looking at the Parlay Pats deal.
And I'll certainly appreciate the pop for those articles. One that I found interesting in particular was a discussion that our Brad Allen had with Max Meltzer from Cambi, where he talks about the ongoing relationship with DraftKings. He asks Max some tough questions about limits. And I thought the answers there were interesting. I'll point you to LegalSportsReport.com to check those out. And, you know, I believe just before we go, I was falsely accused in saying that I would not give Eric any credit for the Oregon article that he so doggedly pursued. It was definitely one of the best pieces that we've had on the site today.
This week? Yeah. Yeah, at least this week, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean,
you listen, want a whole week? Get back to work.
It's only halfway through it.
That's true. 3 days. That's true. It's only,
I mean, I've written something like 1500 stories at LSR, I think, over the years. It's probably, so it's, I'd say it's in the top at least 1,000.
I would say so.
No doubt.
Well. I would say so as that. Well.
Man, I've, you guys I've know read, how to make a guy feel good.
Look, I've read 1500 stories on LSR, and it's definitely one of the best 1,000 that I've read on there.
I'm just impressed you read it, Matt.
Well, I mean, listen, guys, I mean, I don't always just rely on the podcast to be filled in of what happens each week. You know, I mean, I like to stay on top of this stuff myself, especially when it's the triumphant return of Eric Ramsey to the podcast is in play.
Man, if he's going to spend all that time on a Hooked for Phonics subscription during this quarantine, he's going to use it for something.
Exactly.
I have one more asterisk I want to put on all of this. It has nothing to do with any of that, but I was accused on Twitter this week of making a tweet that got lines for that NASCAR iRacing event. I wanted to, my tweets are not affecting what regulators do and don't approve for sports betting. I want to throw that out there. I'm sure almost everybody listening knows this, but like I didn't send out a tweet and then Circa took down its lines in Nevada for the NASCAR esports event. You know, there's regulation takes place behind the scenes. You have to, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's. If my tweet is not getting any kind of betting markets shut down in a legal market, that's it was really entertaining to me, but I just wanted to, to clarify that for the masses who may have seen that.
Yeah. And not only that, it's like really hard to get things approved in Nevada as it is anyway. So it's like, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like the fact that you would just say like, oh, interesting, which by the way, you weren't even talking crap about it. You really just said like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, great. I mean, we've talked about this for a long time, right? New Jersey has been much more aggressive about what they allow, the stuff that, you know, that Nevada has never allowed. I was like, okay, this is awesome. This is kind of interesting. And Nevada is like, oh, they've actually allowed this to happen. And apparently Circa did have a dialogue, and then ultimately they didn't give final approval for it. Does that mean, I think that probably means maybe they're working toward it in the future. You know, we're going to have a full slate of these NASCAR esport events that are going to be broadcast on Fox. So it'd be cool. I think I'm all for it. You know, it's, you know, as long as you're doing it right, as Adam will tell you, and we'll all tell you, like betting on esports is a little dicey. You know, we there's a match fixing in League of Legends that we just saw the other day. So yeah, I'm not trying to poo poo things. And I'm for more robust markets as long as we're doing it right, and definitely for more table tennis markets.
Yeah, no, definitely. And if you haven't checked out this iRacing stuff, I think there's another race this week. Give it a whirl. The thing that's a little bit different, I think, than traditional esports is these cars are being driven by actual NASCAR drivers that are like actually making tons of money as it is anyway. And so the chance, like you mentioned, for any sort of shenanigans and stuff, I think is pretty slim, because these are actual real professional drivers driving this. It's not like kids at home that don't, you know, that are playing this thing or whatever. So anyhow, we'll see how it all plays out. It's interesting times, no doubt. And we are trying to do the best we can to keep people entertained. And I think that, you know, look, what NASCAR's doing is pretty good. Guys, as always, please, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, really do appreciate all of that. Go ahead and subscribe as well, so this just hits your phone every time that we post something. All the stories we talked about, 100% up on LegalSportsReport.com as well. So go over there and you can get the full written breakdowns of everything that we talked about here. And we'd like to thank Eric Ramsey for joining us and making his triumphant return. And Eric, I hope you take down one of these big WSOP.com tournaments this week. I really
do. You too, buddy.
Yeah, I it's impossible for me. I can't do it. For Adam, for Dustin, I'm Matt. Talk to you guys next week.
The go through some emails, check your calendar, see that you have a 45-minute break in the day between meetings, realize this is your moment, so you drive right to McDonald's to pick up something extra delicious ASAP. Meal.
Thank you.
There's a meal for every moment at McDonald's.
Buy one of your select faves and get another for just a dollar every morning, like a sausage McMuffin or hash browns.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for product of equal or lesser value. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Combo meal valid when product served.